طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice, that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the mainstream media. And that is why it is so important that it is broadcast each week on This Week in Palestine. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham, and we continue it in his memory. This is John Roberts. The genocide in Gaza and the West Bank continues unabated, and our president and complicit Congress say and do whatever Israel demands. There is no U.S. leadership. There is no statesmanship. There is no honor. There is no humanity in our complicity with Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people. We cannot even demand an immediate ceasefire. We cannot even just say stop. Stop the killing and diplomatically work out the issues of concern, like hostage release. Israel has already extracted its revenge by the killing of nearly 8,000 Gazan civilians, 3,000 of them children. Just stop. Cease fire. But no. Israel wants to intensify the massacre of civilians with a ground invasion. They will not even seek out a solution that will protect the hostages pending negotiation. A ground invasion by Israel puts their hostages at an enormous risk. Israel already has killed several with their bombardments of Gaza. This is what happens in a campaign driven by revenge. And because our leaders will not challenge Israel, we have all become complicit. We begin today with Al Jazeera journalists responding to the death of a fellow Al Jazeera journalist whose entire family was killed in the Gaza bombardment. Al Jazeera is the only news agency reporting directly out of Gaza. Let me say that again. Al Jazeera is the only news agency reporting directly out of Gaza. And so today we focus on their reporting from the front with an emphasis on the terrible cost to them and, in some cases, their martyred families. Here is a report by Democracy Now!
We begin today's show in Gaza, where Palestinian authorities say the death toll from Israel's 20-day bombardment has topped 7,000, including over 2,900 children. On Wednesday, an Israeli strike killed the wife, son, daughter, and grandson of one of the most prominent journalists in Gaza, Wael Dadu, Al Jazeera's Arabic Gaza bureau chief, who's been described as the voice of Gaza. The Israeli strike on the Nuseirat refugee camp killed at least 25 people in total. Dadu's family had fled to the refugee camp in central Gaza after Israel ordered residents of northern Gaza to vacate their homes. Al Jazeera condemned the Israeli attack, describing it as a, quote, indiscriminate assault. Dadu learned that his family members had been killed while live on air. The network aired dramatic footage of Wael at the hospital's morgue where the bodies of his dead wife, son, and daughter had been taken. He was still wearing his press flak jacket. Moments later, Al Jazeera's senior political analyst, Marwan Bishara, spoke on air to condemn Israel's killing of civilians.
This is much more than an incident. This is a crime, a deliberate crime. The Israelis are targeting civilians. The Israeli president said there are no innocents in Gaza. Well, here it is, Mr. Herzog, the president of Israel. Tell me if these children are not innocent. When you say there are no innocents in Gaza and everyone supports Hamas, I want you to tell me, you who this crime is in your responsibility. This genocide has been called by Israeli president and Israeli prime minister, enabled by the leaders of Western democracies.
That was Al Jazeera's senior political analyst Marwan Bashara speaking after Israeli airstrike killed the family of his colleague Wael Dahdu. Wael also spoke to Al Jazeera Arabic from inside the hospital.
There is no safe place in Gaza at all, and no one is safe. No one is safe from the aggression and the treachery of the occupation. That's why we have left. We have delegated our faith to Allah Almighty, and we will continue this path that we have chosen at the end. This is a profession of troubles, whatever you want to call it. And Allah the Almighty, I hope that Allah the Almighty would bestow patience upon us.
During the coverage that you did over the past few days depicting Gaza being targeted, you stayed here steadfast. Do you think that your coverage has angered the army of the occupation so that they could target your family?
Unfortunately, everything is possible these days. All red lines have been crossed by the occupation army, and this is very probable. However, here we want to say for the record that when we carry out our duties, we do it to the fullest with high professionalism. In the middle of bodies and the injured and in the middle of destruction, we have a professionality that they would need eons for them to meet that professionalism. So we work everything that takes place on the ground, our camera would capture without any fabrication and without even exaggerating. We are not exaggerating. What's happening is truly big, and the coverage has to be big as well.
Finally, if you would, although that's reality now, would you pursue legal action to prosecute the occupation for murdering your family?
Let's see what happens after the surgeries that some of my family members are undergoing and after we bury our dead, and then we will talk about this matter.
That was Wael Dahdu, Al Jazeera Arabic's Gaza bureau chief, speaking through a translator just after an Israeli airstrike killed his wife, son, daughter, and grandson. The killing came on the same day that Axios reported U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken had recently urged the Prime Minister of Qatar to tone down Al Jazeera's coverage of Israel's bombardment of Gaza. We go now to Gaza City, where we're joined by one of Wael Dahdu's colleagues, Yumna Al-Sayed, a correspondent for Al Jazeera in the Gaza Strip. Yumna, welcome to Democracy Now! Please accept our condolences on the deaths of the family members of your colleague. Could you explain what you know about what happened and where exactly his family was killed?
First of all, Wael, like many of us, like thousands of Palestinians who got the order to evacuate from the north and from Gaza City to the south, heeded that order and moved his family to the south, to Nusayrat refugee camp. And when I say refugee camp, it means I'm talking about a very densely populated area with homes very much adjacent to one another. A place that just hosts thousands of homes and civilians and armed civilians. This is where Wael kept his family, in another home or a family home there. They were hosted. The entire family, his wife, his kids, his nephews, nieces, everyone. He stayed in Gaza City to report from Gaza City, where most of our crews had headed to the south to report from Khan Yunis in the south. But as you've seen, as the whole world has seen, the bombardments were relentless every single day in the south. When I say the south, I mean Khan Yunis in Rafah, for people who don't know. I mean Nusayrat, I mean Al-Brej. All these days since the evacuation order, not one day, not one hour, these places were not targeted. Homes were targeted. Hospitals were targeted. In these same areas that people were asked to evacuate, hundreds of families who had evacuated from the north and from Gaza City were killed in those bombings. When we say there's no safe place in Gaza, we're not lying. We're not being biased. We're not exaggerating. The north, Gaza City, and the south, they're all just the same in terms of bombardment, in terms of targeting. And in all the life conditions, it doesn't mean that they're asking people to go to the south because there is a better life condition in the south. There's water in the south. Or for example, there's electricity. Or there's drinking water that you can buy. Or you can find bread easily. I just want to ask one question. Why did they ask us to go to the south?
Yumna, earlier this week, the Israeli government approved, quote, emergency regulations that would close broadcasters thought to be acting against the, quote, security of the state. Is Al Jazeera the only network broadcasting live from Gaza? I mean, CNN has a reporter there. He files tape reports as he, too, with his children, is fleeing the bombardment. But in terms of the live stand-up reporting, is Al Jazeera alone?
Yes, it's Al Jazeera alone. And I want to ask, how does Israel or the United States describe Al Jazeera to be biased? Because they say this. They say that Al Jazeera is biased. They say that Al Jazeera should lower its tone on its coverage on Gaza. Why are we getting these orders? Is Al Jazeera showing something that is not happening? Is Al Jazeera filming a targeting or a bombing or those thousands that are being brought to the hospitals or hundreds that are being kept under the rubble or civil defense crews that dig with their hands and with no resources? Is this not a reality? Is Al Jazeera saying that there's no water and there's no electricity in Gaza and there is? Is it saying that there are no networks in the mobile phones and there are? Why are we getting these orders? We're getting these orders because we are broadcasting what we really see. We are neutral. We're not showing one part against the other. Didn't you hear Al Jazeera say that there were rockets launched from Gaza? Every time there are rockets launched from Gaza, don't our correspondents in Al Jazeera Arabic and Al Jazeera English say that there are dozens of rockets launched from Gaza? They hit places in Israeli towns. Sirens were heard. Injuries in Israeli towns were conducted. Don't we report that? We're not biased if we only report what is happening on the Israeli side, but we're biased when we report what is happening on the Palestinian side. Is this what we have learned in journalism schools around the world? Is this how we're supposed to be neutral and objective? Is this the image that we should give our audience who trust us?
Yumna, in 2021, Israel leveled a 12-story building in Gaza, housing the offices of Associated Press Al Jazeera and other media outlets. Israel justified the bombing by claiming Hamas had been using the building but offered no proof. Israel gave media workers inside advance warning of the attack, telling them they had just 1 hour to evacuate, refused to delay the airstrike when journalists begged for more time to recover personal items, cameras and other equipment. The head of Al Jazeera called the attack a blatant violation of human rights and war crime. Associated Press said it had no evidence of Hamas operating the building. Last year, Israeli forces shot dead a Palestinian-American journalist, Shireen Abu Akleh, as she was covering the Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank. Can you talk about what the calls are for the U.S. government, which provides so much of the funding of the Israeli military, to make demands now? They've been pushed into calling possibly for a pause. They're not calling for a ceasefire. But this issue of journalists and civilians dying in such large numbers. At this point, I think the number is 24 journalists, 3 Israelis, 20 Palestinians, and 1 Lebanese cameraman from Reuters.
In 2021, I had an interview on your show. It was on the phone. Maybe that's why you don't remember me. And I told you clearly that this was a targeting against journalism and against media, all media offices in the Gaza Strip in the 2021 were completely destroyed. All buildings hosting any media office, including Al Jazeera's and the AP's, were leveled to the ground. I survived a car accident, or let's say, I don't even want to say a car accident. It's not, because it was a targeting of another jihad, Islamic jihad wanted or something in a car. And he wasn't, by the way. They just assumed that he was. And I survived that targeting miraculously. I almost died in that attack. The United States claims to be a democratic state. It claims to respect all rights. It claims to be a civilized nation. What is the correct description of these words for the United States? What did the United States do when Shireen Abu Akleh was killed? And she is a Palestinian American. Did they stand up for her? What did they do when our bureau and AP's bureau were bombed, when the AP is an American agency and there was no proof of any Israeli claims until this day? We're in 2023. The United States, it's clear to the whole world, to you Americans, before any other nation, supports the benefits of Israel despite all realities, despite all proofs, and despite any claim of democracy or rights. The United States only supports what Israel says. Even if the entire world sees that this is not the truth, it will continue standing next to it. And I can't respect a nation saying, or a government, I'm not going to talk about the American people, because I know that not all governments represent their people. But how can I respect a government that sees all these violations and claims to be a supporter of human rights and democracy and stand still, not doing anything?
Yumna, I'd like to go to a clip of you live on the air on October 7th, at the moment when Israel bombed a tower behind you in Gaza City.
Yumna, please take cover. If you are in a position to do so safely, you can explain to us what we're happening. If you are not in a position to do so safely, yes, then please get to safety.
No, it's okay. This is a missile attack on Palestine Tower, right in the middle of Gaza City.
Yumna, take a moment to breathe. Take a moment, you and your team. Take a moment to breathe.
So, Yumna, okay? That was just on October 7th, the day, of course, that Hamas carried out its attack. So if you could describe the scene, what was the scene then in Gaza?
Can you believe that that missile that you saw in front of you was just a warning missile? This is how the people of Gaza get warned before they are completely bombarded. That strong and powerful bombardment that you saw in front of you was just a warning missile. I was standing normally. I didn't even feel that it was danger where we are. We're on the rooftop of our bureau. It's perfectly a safe place. We take safety precautions first because we don't want to risk our lives. We don't want to put our lives in danger. But can we, no matter how much precautions we take, can we push that danger and risk away? Was Wael able to protect his family? Am I able to protect my family? Is anyone in Gaza able to protect their families? We're not. We're under constant fire. We're under constant bombardment.
Yumna, we thank you so much for being with us. And yes, we do remember you from 2021 on the phone or when we can see you. Your reporting has been unforgettable. Yumna Al-Sayed is a correspondent for Al Jazeera speaking to us from Gaza. Please be safe. And again, the condolences of our newsroom to your whole Al Jazeera family. Your last comment.
Yes, I just want to say one thing. I want to say this, and I want the world to remember my words. In my culture, in my language, we say, كَمَا تَدِينُ تُدَانُ وَلَوْ بَعْدَ حِينَ. In your culture, in your language, they say, what goes around comes around. And when it comes around, like this whole world is watching the genocides happening in the Gaza Strip, we shall be watching too.
Yumna Al-Sayed, thank you so much for joining us.
That was a report broadcast originally on Democracy Now! Featuring reporters on the ground in Gaza. The main problem with the reporting by our mainstream media is that they rarely put the Hamas attack in historical perspective. So the Palestinian narrative once again goes unreported. This next feature provides that context in a concise article written by journalist Chris Hedges, who for many years was the Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times. The article is narrated by Eunice Wong.
Israel's culture of deceit. Israel, which always seeks to blame Palestinians for the atrocities it carries out, is the least trustworthy source about the bombing of the hospital in Gaza. Written by Chris Hedges for the Chris Hedges Report, chrishedges.substack.com. Narrated by Eunice Wong. Israel was founded on lies. The lie that Palestinian land was largely unoccupied. The lie that 750,000 Palestinians fled their homes and villages during their ethnic cleansing by Zionist militias in 1948 because they were told to do so by Arab leaders. The lie that it was Arab armies that started the 1948 war that saw Israel seize 78% of historic Palestine. The lie that Israel faced annihilation in 1967, forcing it to invade and occupy the remaining 22% of Palestine, as well as land belonging to Egypt and Syria. Israel is sustained by lies. the lie that Israel wants a just and equitable peace and will support a Palestinian state, the lie that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, the lie that Israel is an outpost of Western civilization in a sea of barbarism, the lie that Israel respects the rule of law and human rights. Israel's atrocities against the Palestinians are always greeted with lies. I heard them. I recorded them. I published them in my stories for the New York Times when I was the paper's Middle East bureau chief. I covered war for 2 decades, including 7 years in the Middle East. I learned quite a bit about the size and lethality of explosive devices. There's nothing in the arsenal of Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad, PIJ, that could have replicated the massive explosive power of the missile that killed an estimated 500 civilians in the Al-Ali Arab Christian Hospital in Gaza. Nothing. If Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad had these kinds of missiles, huge buildings in Israel would be rubble with hundreds of dead. They don't. The whistling sound, audible on the video moments before the explosion, appears to come from the high velocity of a missile. The sound gives it away. No Palestinian rocket makes this noise. And then there's the speed of the missile. Palestinian rockets are slow and lumbering, clearly visible as they arc in the sky and then tumble in free fall towards their targets. They don't strike with precision or travel at close to supersonic speed. They're incapable of killing hundreds of people. The Israeli military dropped roof-knocking rockets with no warheads on the hospital in the days leading up to the October 17th strike, the familiar warning given by Israel to evacuate buildings, according to Al-Ali hospital officials. Hospital officials also said they had received calls from Israel saying, "We warned you to evacuate twice." Israel has demanded that all hospitals in northern Gaza be evacuated. Following the strike on the hospital, Hananya Naftali, a digital aide to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, posted on X, formerly Twitter, "Israeli Air Force struck a Hamas terrorist base inside a hospital in Gaza." The post was quickly deleted. Since the October 7th incursion into Israel by Palestinian resistance fighters, which reportedly left some 1,300 Israelis dead, many of them civilians, and saw some 200 kidnapped as hostages and taken to Gaza, Israel has carried out 51 attacks on healthcare facilities in Gaza that have killed 15 healthcare workers and injured 27, according to the World Health Organization, WHO. Out of 35 hospitals in Gaza, 4 are not functioning due to severe damage and targeting. Only 8 of the 22 UNRWA primary healthcare centers are partially functional, the WHO says. The brazenness of Israeli lies stunned those of us who reported from Gaza. It didn't matter if we had seen the Israeli attack, including the shooting of unarmed Palestinians. It didn't matter how many witnesses we interviewed. It didn't matter what photographic or forensic evidence we obtained. Israel lied. Small lies, big lies, huge lies. These lies came reflexively and instantly from the Israeli military, Israeli politicians, and Israeli media. They were amplified by Israel's well-oiled propaganda machine and repeated with a cloying sincerity on international news outlets. Israel engages in the kinds of jaw-dropping lies that characterize despotic regimes. It doesn't deform the truth, it inverts it. It paints a picture that is diametrically opposed to reality. Those of us who have covered the occupied territories have run into Israel's Alice in Wonderland narratives, which we dutifully insert into our stories, required under the rules of American journalism, although we know they're untrue. Israel has invented an Orwellian lexicon. Children killed by Israelis become children caught in crossfire. The bombing of residential districts, with dozens of dead and wounded, becomes a surgical strike on a bomb-making factory. The destruction of Palestinian homes becomes the demolition of the homes of terrorists. The big lie, Grosse Lüge, feeds the two reactions Israel seeks to elicit— racism among its supporters, and terror among its victims. The big lies fosters the myth of a clash of civilizations, a war between democracy, decency, and honor on one side, and Islamic terrorism, barbarism, and medievalism on the other. George Orwell, in his novel 1984, called The Big Lie doublethink. Doublethink uses logic against logic and repudiates morality while laying claim to it. The Big Lie abolishes nuances, ambiguities, and contradictions that can plague conscience. It's designed to create cognitive dissonance. It permits no gray zones. The world is black and white, good and evil, righteous and unrighteous. The Big Lie allows believers to take comfort, a comfort they're desperately seeking, in their own moral superiority, even as they abrogate all morality. It feeds what Edward Bernays called the logic-proof compartment of dogmatic adherence. All effective propaganda, Bernays writes, targets and builds upon these irrational, psychological habits. Israeli supporters thirst for these lies. They don't want to know the truth. The truth would force them to examine their racism, self-delusion, and complicity in oppression, murder, and genocide. Most importantly, the Big Lie sends an ominous message to the Palestinians. The Big Lie states that Israel will wage a campaign of mass terror and genocide and never take responsibility for its crimes. The Big Lie obliterates the truth. It obliterates the dignity of human thought and human action. It obliterates facts. It obliterates history. It obliterates comprehension. It obliterates hope. It reduces all communication to the language of violence. When oppressors speak to the oppressed exclusively through indiscriminate violence, the oppressed answer through indiscriminate violence. The cartoonist Joe Sacco and I watched Israeli soldiers taunt and shoot small boys in the Khan Yunis refugee camp in Gaza. We interviewed the boys and their parents afterwards in the hospital. In a few cases, we attended their funerals. We had their names. We had the dates and locations of the shootings. Israel's response was to say that we were not in Gaza. We had made it up. The Israeli Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, Defense Minister, and Israeli Defense Force, IDF spokesperson, immediately blamed the killing of the Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh in 2022 on Palestinian gunmen. Israel disseminated footage of a Palestinian fighter they said shot and killed the journalist, who was wearing a flak jacket and helmet marked press. Benny Gantz, who was at the time defense minister, stated that no Israeli gunfire was directed at the journalist and that the Israeli army had seen footage of indiscriminate shooting by Palestinian terrorists. This lie was peddled until video footage examined by B'Tselem, the Israeli Center for Human Rights in the occupied territories, identified the location of the Palestinian gunmen depicted in the video. The video, the human rights organization found, was taken in a different location from where Shireen was killed. When Israel is caught lying, as it was with the murder of Shireen, it promises an investigation. But these investigations are a sham. Impartial investigations into the hundreds of killings by soldiers and Jewish settlers of Palestinians are rarely carried out. Perpetrators are almost never brought to trial or held accountable. The pattern of Israeli obfuscation is predictable. So is the collusion of nearly all of the corporate media, along with Republican and Democratic politicians. U.S. politicians decried the murder of Shireen and dutifully repeated the old mantra, calling for a thorough investigation by the army that carried out the crime. A few months later, Israel admitted that there was a high possibility that an Israeli soldier killed the journalist by accident. But by then, the eruption of street protests and rage over the killing of the journalist was over, and her murder largely forgotten. By the time the conclusive proof comes out about the bombing of the hospital, it too will be a distant memory. There's dramatic footage captured in September 2000 at the Netzarim Junction in the Gaza Strip, where I saw a 19-year-old boy shot and killed by an Israeli sniper, by France 2 TV, of a father trying to shield his traumatized 12-year-old son, Mohammed Al-Dura, from Israeli gunfire that ultimately killed him. The killing of the boy resulted in the typical propaganda campaign by Israel. Israeli officials spent years lying about the killing, first blaming the Palestinians for the shooting, later suggesting that the scene was faked, and finally insisting the boy was still alive. when an Israeli soldier in 2003 murdered the 23-year-old student and American activist Rachel Corrie by crushing her to death with a bulldozer as she tried to prevent the illegal demolition of a Palestinian doctor's home, the Israeli army said it was an accident, for which Corrie was responsible. The Israeli military has killed at least 20 journalists since 2001 with no accountability, according to a 2023 report by the New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists. Immediately after a journalist is killed by security forces, Israeli officials often push out a counter-narrative to media reporting, the CPJ concluded. This includes blaming the deaths on indiscriminate fire by Palestinians or attempts to discredit those killed as terrorists. Israel blocks the work of independent human rights organizations into atrocities and war crimes it commits in Gaza and the West Bank. It refuses to cooperate with the International Criminal Court into possible war crimes in the occupied territories. It does not cooperate with the UN Human Rights Council and prohibits the UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories occupied since 1967 from entering the country. Israel revoked the work permit for Omar Shakir, the director of Human Rights Watch, Israel and Palestine, in 2018, and expelled him. In May 2018, Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs and Public Diplomacy published a report calling on the European Union and European states to halt their direct and indirect financial support and funding to Palestinian and international human rights organizations that have ties to terror and promote boycotts against Israel. After the bombing of the hospital, Israel first released a video that purported to show Palestinian Islamic Jihad rockets which struck the hospital. The Israelis hastily removed the video when journalists noticed that timestamps showed the images were taken 40 minutes after the strike on the hospital. Israeli propagandists, aware that Palestinian rockets have little explosive power, then claimed that Hamas stored munitions under the hospital. This caused the massive explosion, they said. But if this was true, it would mean there would be a secondary explosion. There was none. And now Israel has released what they say is a recording of two Hamas militants discussing the missile strike on the hospital. The militants ask each other, in a self-incriminating conversation that's too ridiculous to believe, if Hamas or PIJ carried out the strike. Please, how was Israel completely in the dark about an incursion by thousands of armed Palestinian militants from Gaza and Israel on October 7th and able to capture this incriminating conversation by two supposed militants? Israel has a whole unit of Mistaravim, Israeli Jewish undercover agents trained to pose as Palestinians and secretly operate among Palestinians, the reporter Jonathan Cook writes. Israel produced a highly popular TV series about such people in Gaza called Fauda. You have to be beyond credulous to think that Israel couldn't and wouldn't rig up a call like this to fool us, just as it regularly fools Palestinians in Gaza. Israel has also long targeted medical facilities, ambulances, and medics, as Middle East scholar Norman Finkelstein points out. It bombed a Palestinian children's hospital during the 1982 war in Lebanon, killing 60 people. It also carried out missile strikes on clearly marked Lebanese ambulances during the 2006 war between Israel and Lebanon. It damaged or destroyed 29 ambulances and almost half of Gaza's health facilities, including 15 hospitals, during the 2008-2009 assault on Gaza, known as Operation Cast Lead. It routinely prohibited wounded Palestinians from being picked up by ambulances during this operation, often leaving them to die. During Operation Protective Edge, the 51-day assault on Gaza in 2014, Israel destroyed or damaged 17 hospitals and 56 primary healthcare centers and damaged or destroyed 45 ambulances. You can see my interview with Professor Finkelstein about Gaza and Israel on the Real News YouTube channel. Amnesty International, which investigated the Israeli attacks on three of these hospitals in 2014, dismissed the evidence for the attacks offered by Israel as false. The image tweeted by the Israeli military does not match satellite images of the Al-Wafa hospital and appears to depict a different location, the report read. Expose Israeli lies and you are attacked by Israel and its supporters as an anti-Semite and apologist for terrorists. You're banished from mainstream media. You're denied forums to speak about the issue and, as has happened to me, disinvited from university events. It's an old game, one I've played as a reporter many, many times. I bear the scars of the lies spewed out by Israel and its lobby. Meanwhile, Israel continues its butchery, endorsed and even lauded by Western political leaders, including Joe Biden, who accompany the torrent of lies from Israel like a Wagnerian chorus. That was Israel's Culture of Deceit, written by Chris Hedges, narrated by Eunice Wong. For the Chris Hedges Report, chrishedges.substack.com.
You have been listening to an article written by Chris Hedges, which concisely gives the present war some much-needed context. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here every week at the same time and place. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. To access our permanent archive to hear any of our past broadcasts, go to truthandjusticeradio.org, all one word, truthandjusticeradio.org, and click on This Week in Palestine Archive. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.